Hail Mary, full of grace, the Lord is with thee. Blessed art thou amongst women, and blessed is the fruit of thy womb, Jesus. Glory be to the Father, to the Son, and the Holy Ghost. Saint Vincent Ferrer, Saint Jude, Our Lady of Victory, Lady of Sorrows, Lady Help of Christians, Saint Ignatius. Good. You're in business, right? Yeah, it's fine. So theoretically, we're on chapter 58 in the Roman Curia, which is how you fold paper when you elect popes and things like that, and you know, which red guy and sits in this office, which one sits in that office. So the heck with that. So chapter, except for the fact that, you know, that the Roman Curia acts in the name of the Pope, you know, that the congregations, the various congregations act in the name of the Pope, so that there are things that are reserved to the Pope, decisions in daily church life that are reserved to the Pope, but the Pope himself can't obviously make all those decisions. Like, you know, handling 1,000 different confession cases a day, the Pope can't do that. So he has the Curia to act in his name. The Curia acts in his name, and its foundation comes from the Book of Exodus, the 72 helpers of Moses. And Moses was handling every single case by himself. And I think it was Joachim in the tent that told him that, you know, you're the head. You can't handle every case yourself. You should form 72 wise men and let them handle the majority of cases, and only those that they can't handle go above them to you. And everything that those 72 men decide is going to be done in your name. That way you don't have to handle it. And so that's kind of the foundation of it. And so the Curia essentially is that. But now the hierarchy on chapter 59, the hierarchy of the church. And the first thing is the divine hierarchy. So by the divine hierarchy is the hierarchy established by Christ. So there's the divine hierarchy in the church. And then there is the ecclesiastical hierarchy. The ecclesiastical hierarchy, which means the church hierarchy, is a human hierarchy. The divine hierarchy is, even though we say ecclesiastical, it's human. It's a hierarchy that was established by man for the benefit of the church. But the divine hierarchy is only this. This is the hierarchy of the Catholic Church, which is Pope, Bishop, Priest, Deacon, Faithful. So that's the basic, this is the skeleton of the hierarchy. This is the skeleton, and then the Catholic Church puts meats on the bones and, you know, and lays it down so that there are, it breaks it down to, you have amongst priests, for instance, you'll have a Monsignor, an Archpriest, and then you're a pastor, and then a vicar, and so on. So, but all are priests. Like here in the divine hierarchy, Father Leith and I are the same. In the ecclesiastical hierarchy, Father Leith is beneath me. In the ecclesiastical hierarchy, I am the superior and pastor of this parish and the prior of Phoenix. Father Leith is my adjutor. And so in the ecclesiastical hierarchy, we have a different ranking. In the divine hierarchy, we have the same ranking. Same thing is true. So amongst priests, but it's all based, the ecclesiastical hierarchy is attached to and based on the divine hierarchy of the church. And of course, with the Pope, there is no breakdown of the Pope, with the exception that you could put in quotes the congregations, you know, the divine office of the faith, the Roman Curia. Roman Curia acts in the name of the, when was the congregations, it's religious orders, but the Curia. Curia that acts in the name of the Pope. That's in quotes, kind of as an extension of his practice, not the divine hierarchy, but the human additions. And is ecclesiastical. So the ecclesiastical hierarchy. And then, so there is no difference in hierarchy between an archbishop, a bishop, vicar apostolate as regards divine hierarchy. Anyone who is a bishop, strictly speaking, is equal in authority with the exception of the Bishop of Rome. So that, but the church, in order to function, in order to function in an ordered manner, has to break down this hierarchy with a little bit more detail so that it can function in daily life. If both Father Leith and I are the pastors here, there's going to be a problem, because one thing is he would turn this into a hockey rink down here. And so the there's going to be a problem because of the fact that just practical day-to-day life isn't going to function. So there has to be an ecclesiastical breaking down of the hierarchy established by God. And this ecclesiastical breaking down of the hierarchy is working in, what do you call it, in accord with the divine hierarchy. It's not working against the divine hierarchy. So that you you have the various members of the hierarchy. The foundation of all hierarchy in the Catholic Church is order. Holy orders. That's the principle of all authority in Catholic Church. You have holy orders, then you have the possibility of receiving a hierarchy, of being a true member of the hierarchy in the Catholic Church. So there's a whole section in St. Thomas Aquinas, and there's a whole section in dogmatic theology on how a mother superior is not part of the hierarchy. So that the mother superior of a convent, she has what they call matriarchal authority. She can spank her kids or whatever. She has a matriarchal authority, but she's actually not part of the hierarchy of the church. A woman can never be a part of the hierarchy of the church. Now, St. Thomas points out that a woman can be, and often is, a part of the natural hierarchy. Like, for instance, a queen. A queen has authority. Queen Isabella has authority in the natural realm over the people of Spain. And that she has authority to lead armies, to, you know, St. Joan of Arc, for instance, the leading of armies and so on. In the natural realm, that a woman can, in special circumstances, have authority. In the supernatural realm, she cannot. A woman is not capable. She's not capable of having authority. This is one of the problems, just a side note, in the Vatican II, post-Vatican II church, is that the majority of dioceses, well, let's say at least 40 to 50, 60% in the United States, have women vicars. They have women vicars in the women chancellors in the diocese who direct the priests around. There's no way, that's impossible in the Catholic Church, but that's the way it is in the new days, that lay people involved in the hierarchy and women involved in the hierarchy is impossible. So the first foundation, the first principle of any kind of hierarchy in the Catholic Church, you have to have some connection to holy orders. Those that are capable of holy orders are men. You enter into holy orders by becoming, or you enter into the holy orders, the first step is to become a cleric. So, you know, to receive the clerical tonsure. When you've received clerical tonsure, you have the ability to receive some kind, you have the ability to take on a benefice and to have some kind of authority in the Catholic Church. So that's the very first step to the priesthood, is the receiving of the clerical tonsure, which when the bishop cuts our hair in the form of a cross, or in the case of bald people, he just makes scissor moves across the head, and somehow it counts. It's really good to see that when you see the guys up there with it. But they still do it. So anyway, so the but nonetheless, there's a cutting of the hair in the form of a cross, and that's not the same as a monastic tonsure, which is a little bowl thing around the head, which is a symbol of monk. But the priestly tonsure is the sign of the cross, and that makes it possible for a man to receive holy orders. And since he's able to receive holy orders after the clerical tonsure, he's able to receive authority in the Catholic Church, so that he can receive authority even before he achieves the status of deacon. It is possible for him to receive authority as long as he has received the clerical tonsure. Without the holy orders, it is impossible. Let's see, let's go through the missing element here. Something that's not part of the hierarchy is cardinals. Cardinals are outside the hierarchy. Cardinals don't have any authority in the church. If they do, it's because of some other reason. There are three kinds of cardinals. Cardinal bishops, cardinal priests, and cardinal deacons. Now, normally a cardinal deacon is going to already be a bishop, but he's designated cardinal deacon, cardinal priest, and cardinal bishop. And all that a cardinal is, he's not part of the ecclesiastical hierarchy as cardinal. All that cardinal means is, this man, when the pope dies, elects a new pope. It's the only authority that a cardinal has. Cardinal where it gets to wear a red cassock, and when the pope dies, he goes to Rome and he elects the new pope. What a cardinal is, he's not a member of the hierarchy. What a cardinal is a he is a honorary Roman, as in a city of Rome. He's an honorary Roman. And all cardinals are designated a place in Rome. Even cardinal deacons, they're all designated a parish in Rome, which they are said to be in charge of, which they probably never visited ever in their lives. but they have to be designated because, you see, according to in the early days of the church, it was the Roman citizens. Before the cardinals didn't come into being until about the 1100s. Before that, it was Roman citizens that elected pope. They just simply went out when the pope died. They would go out and they grabbed a bishop. An example is St. Gregory the Great, who did not want to be pope. And he was not a bishop. He was just an abbot in a monastery. He was a priest. And the people in Rome came to the monastery. They broke the doors down. They went in. They grabbed him. They brought him into Rome and said, "You are the pope." That's how he was elected. They didn't go through conclave or ballots, folding ballots, all this kind of garbage. They just grabbed him and they said, "You're the pope." And that happened many times in the history of the church. It's the Roman citizens that elect the pope. Cardinals were established so that there was order put in the Roman election of a pope, so that these cardinals would be now the Roman citizens and the only Roman citizens that have the right to elect pope. So a common misconception about cardinals is that they are above bishops. They're not. They're not even above priests as cardinals. They're just simply people who can elect the pope, and therefore it fits outside of the hierarchy. However, because it's such an honorary position, normally, a cardinal is going to also be given authority in the church. So he's going to be any important delegate is going to usually be a cardinal, but that's simply because of an honorary position. But it's not something that is required. And then the let's see here. Just quickly with regard to, we'll just lay out the, before going through the jurisdiction here. I hope we get this right, because I always hated this part of theology. Apostolic vicar. The part of this is on the other page, the one that we just skipped. And then archbishop. And then bishop. And then auxiliary bishop. Those are your theoretical possibilities for bishop. Auxiliary bishops never existed before, I think, the 18th century. So there was no such thing as an auxiliary bishop. It's somewhere around the, after the Renaissance is when auxiliary bishops came into being. There was no such thing previous to that. An auxiliary bishop, theoretically, is an impossible creature. But he does exist in the last 300 years. An auxiliary bishop is a bishop who is ordained a bishop but has no jurisdiction. In theory, jurisdiction comes from episcopate and by the divine right. When you are a bishop, you have jurisdiction. The bishop of Rome has jurisdiction over every human being on earth. Remember, the pope is not higher than the bishop as to his orders. He's just a bishop. But he's the bishop of Rome, and by being the bishop of Rome, he has jurisdiction over every human being on earth and has a special authority over every human being. But his order, the basis of his jurisdiction comes from the fact that he is a bishop. These three bishops have jurisdiction: bishop, archbishop, apostolic vicar. The auxiliary bishop is a new breed of bishop, and he is a bishop who only has the power to ordain priests, to confirm, consecrate churches, do everything that a bishop does without jurisdiction. He has no authority. Example of auxiliary bishops are the four bishops of the society. when Bishop Williamson comes here and visits, or Bishop Tissier comes here and visits, I'm his boss, strictly speaking. So I am the superior here. When the bishop comes and visits, you know, he actually has to obey me. He has to follow the schedule that I laid out. He has to follow me, my orders, strictly speaking, because I'm the superior here. The bishop is not. The bishop has no authority. He has honorary, because he's a bishop, he's treated with honor, but he doesn't have authority as bishop. So that's what an auxiliary bishop is. And it's a new breed in the Catholic Church. Only been around the last couple hundred years. And I think it basically started because some bishops in the Renaissance hated doing confirmations. And they didn't like ordaining people because it took time out of their busy eating schedule. And so they ordained auxiliary bishops to do all the stuff for them so they could just stay at the parties. And I think that's kind of how it started. Maybe not the ideal beginning, but that's kind of how it started. And then also then other bishops of huge dioceses, in which it was impossible for them to do all the confirmations themselves because of the vast area, particularly in mission areas, then they would ordain auxiliary bishops to help them do their work. But I think when it started, it wasn't the most noble, history. But nonetheless, it was something necessary and beneficial for the church, given this, when the church expands to a point where there's thousands and thousands and thousands of Catholics in one area. In the beginning, it wasn't that way. Bishops were much more, there were more bishops and a smaller, dioceses were smaller, and the bishop was able to easily confirm and visit all the parishes in his diocese. But in the recent centuries, it became impossible for the bishop to be able to do that, and therefore there came a need for the auxiliary bishop. But he's a unique thing. He theoretically doesn't exist, but he somehow fits into this. He's kind of outside the hierarchy, so he kind of goes along with the cardinal. And then the priests, you know, you have your Monsignor, and Monsignors. The Monsignor is simply an honorary title. Doesn't have any more authority than a regular priest. Generally, what would be done in the old days, canons and Monsignors are honorary titles. Well, what happened is, when a priest was 75 or 80 years old and he was a pastor of a parish, you couldn't demote him. He couldn't hear anymore, he couldn't speak anymore, and he couldn't do anything anymore. So instead, since you couldn't demote him, they said, "Father, you are now a Monsignor. You get to wear a red thing around your, you know, and then you're a canon. You're one of the main canons." And he would still be the official pastor, but the young priest would do everything. He would be the actual pastor. So the new young priest taking over would be the actual pastor. The old padre would say, "I'm the pastor here." No, Father, you're the Monsignor. "Oh, yeah, that's right, I'm the Monsignor." So it's a nice way of, it's an honorary position, which is a nice way of, in most cases, of fulfilling the Catholic principle of promoviator ut removiator, which is a Roman principle of government, which is you promote them in order to remove them. So you don't fire them, you promote them. So it's promoviator ut removiator. So that's just one of the principles of Roman government. So promotion is their way of firing people. And so it's just a way of accomplishing that in practice. And then also, it can also be a bishop can make someone a Monsignor so that he can have more authority honorarily over other priests in the diocese. And so, but in itself, it has no authority. And then archpriest doesn't exist anymore. The archpriest, I think, was something like a Monsignor, but I don't think it exists anymore. And then the deacons, in practice, their work in the church has diminished. In the first 300 years, deacons, for instance, there were seven deacons in charge of seven areas in Rome. The example is St. Lawrence. St. Lawrence, the deacon. He was in charge of the finances in Rome, and and the deacons had a lot more authority in the early days of the church. Because when the church expanded, there used to be deacons permanently, and many deacons would never be ordained priests, and they would exercise authority in the church. But as the church expanded in the Middle Ages, it became impractical for deacons, because deacons can't say Mass, deacons can't hear confessions, and so it became impractical for them to exercise their authority without being also priests. And so they ordained them priests, and the practice of deacons actually carrying authority like they used to doesn't really exist. The only vestige of that is the Holy Saturday liturgy, a memory of that time when deacons used to carry a lot more authority. In the Holy Saturday liturgy, the deacon is the one who carries the Paschal candle in, he has special blessings that he does. The deacon does blessings of the candle and so on. So the deacon is kind of the primary person in the beginning of the Paschal liturgy, which is kind of a vestige and memory of the power of the deacon. With regard to the faithful, a few minutes, the breakdown of the hierarchy of the faithful, first of all, there are the religious. Religious are amongst the faithful. So they call it religion, those that are in religion, which means, I'll say it this way, I forget, the religion is the cloistered. So you have the cloistered, and then you have the active. So the active are below the cloistered, and then below that are the regular faithful. But the religious fit in the category of the faithful. This is why that even a monk who has not received clerical tonsure and who is not connected in holy orders, strictly speaking, he cannot have authority in the church either. So he doesn't have any authority, any ecclesiastical authority either. So if a monk was elected abbot and was not ordained a priest, which did happen in the old days, as in 1,000 years ago, he would have authority over his individual monks, but he would not actually have ecclesiastical authority. So the and then because that became impractical, because you know not being able to say mass and hear confessions, it has become the practice in the last 1,000 years that abbots almost always are priests. They're almost always priests. It didn't used to be that way, but that's the practice the last 1,000 years because of the impracticality of them not being a priest and only remaining religious. And so even a monk is a member of the laity. He's a part of the laity. He's a part of the faithful. But he is consecrated laity. So it's consecrated laity. Laity that have consecrated their life solely to the salvation of the soul, of the individual soul. And secondly, to charity. The two goals of every religious order are salvation of the individual soul. Salvation of my soul is my first work. And then secondly, charity. And then there is the breakdown of all your religious orders. There can be supernatural charity, which means the prayer and sacrifices for the good of the church. So that puts you the Carmelites, the Trappists, and all all the very strict orders in the church. Charity can then be natural charity, such as the taking care of the sick. And then there's your religious, orders connected to hospitals and so on. And it can be the mix between the two, which is education. And then there are your teaching orders. And so on. All the work of each religious order is charity, and then the individual first purpose of every religious order is personal salvation. That their first goal is to save their own souls, and that becomes their only work. And that's common of every single religious order. They are only distinguished, says St. Thomas Aquinas, by their works of charity. So you distinguish them by the particular work of charity that each order is devoted to. And then that's basically it there. And so I will close with that when you hear confessions here. And we'll go ahead and say our prayers.